bringing you back with another old-time throwback review. This time it'll be one of our favorite Undertaker matches. King of the Ring, I believe it was 1999, and it is The Rock versus The Undertaker. And in this match, The Rock, or rather The Undertaker, rather, was Ministry.
Very interesting time.
It was an interesting time. He was in the Ministry, and I believe The Rock was a face?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think they're both kind of like face to the crowd.
Right.
But yeah, I think The Rock is definitely face, and the heel here is Undertaker.
Right.
And with us coming into, obviously, last week we looked at 2002 Survivor Series, so we kind of kept with the Survivor Series theme, and now more of a farewell Undertaker episode here. Just going into this, we picked something very obscure, I think. Like, we were very much debating where we wanted to go with this, and you know, there's some of those, some of these matches that I think are a little bit, I don't want to say played out, but, you know, everybody knows them. Everybody, you know, the Shawn Michaels matches, the
right.
Triple H matches. I feel like that Hell in a Cell match is just, I love that match, but it's
right.
very much beating a dead horse at this point.
Right.
But with that being said, and us kind of coming into this, Undertaker is the champ coming in.
Mm-hmm.
To this match, but before we kind of get into this match, there we have the match going right now. The Rock is entering the ring at the moment, and about to await the arrival of the Undertaker. But just want to go and kind of like DJ get from you, like what are your like really top favorite Undertaker moments? Things that you remember the most, whether it be matches, promos, anything you know relevant to you, and what the Undertaker meant to you wrestling wise.
To me, the Undertaker was consistency, and it was hard to beat someone who was constantly on the show every week, constantly had things to do every week, and that's something you don't really see anymore, especially from big stars. But this was a different time then, when there were so many stars on the same roster, that you kind of had to force those guys to work every week. But for me, my favorite Undertaker stuff was really during the Ministry. I thought that was a really cool take on the whole character of the Undertaker. One of my favorite matches of him was probably, I think it was a First Blood match against Stone Cold. And that was 98?
I think that would have been right around this time period.
Yeah.
What pay-per-view was that? Because I was thinking about that when we picked this one out. I was kind of thinking about that one because I can remember watching that one and him being, the story was he had been busted open already.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the night.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't remember what pay-per-view that is.
I think it's a one-off pay-per-view.
Was it Fully Loaded? I think it might be.
It was either Fully Loaded or Valentine's Day Massacre.
Valentine's Day Massacre was Stone Cold versus Vince McMahon in the cage match.
Oh, that's right.
Where the Big Show made his debut.
Yeah. And maybe it was Fully Loaded.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But either way, that's probably one of my favorite matches because obviously you got Stone Cold, and The Undertaker in their primes, going at it. But this match, I think we picked it because, one, it's two of the better in-ring workers in all time. Two, I mean, both of them are in terrific shape at this time. I mean, The Undertaker looks jacked. Which is, I mean, he's always been the big guy, but he looks enormously jacked for a point of his career this time. But, I mean, they both were in such great shape then, and they put on easily a fantastic match in this aspect. And just, I think The Undertaker had a real grasp of who his character was then.
Mm-hmm. I think both of them at this time have really, like, come into the own of their character. And right as we get into this match, The Undertaker decks The Rock and then immediately decks the referee. To get an advantage. I like Rock's trunks. He's got the pink trim on The Rock and the Bull.
Mm-hmm.
He's going for a Rock Bottom right out of the gate and hits it with no referee. He's going to go for the cover early. No referee in sight.
And they did that so many times, and there's Paul Bearer pulling him out at 2 3/4. Man, Earl Hebner. It's been around for so many years.
Paul Bearer just decked the ref. That's great. That looked very similar of last week's episode when Heyman decked the ref.
Uh-huh.
When he pulled him out of the ring at Survivor Series.
You know, Paul Bearer is, or I guess Paul Heyman, is basically a less weird Paul Bearer.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a way. And Undertaker capitalizes and it gets a choke slam. And you feel like it's it. Anytime Undertaker would hit his finisher, especially during then, you'd think it's it.
Yeah, and this is such a great, like you said, the Ministry is just like, it's such a great time period for The Undertaker, and he looks at the ref after the two count, scares the ref almost out of the ring, drops down, and holds onto the bottom rope, and I think that, you know, like a different time period. I miss when, especially, you know, like the heels and big heels like The Undertaker right now, you know, terrify the ref. You know, they really, you know, would stalk the ref and, you know, things of that nature. Even just taking the ref out. Like, I feel like we don't see a lot of work like that anymore.
Right.
The Rock is back with the upper hand, hitting his patented Brahma Bull punches and clotheslining The Undertaker out of the ring. Undertaker just walking away down the entrance ramp. But I think you hit the nail on the head with The Undertaker. Just consistency. Always there, always, you know, doing very good work, and, you know, at this point in time, such a, you know, so in tune with his character.
And,
you know, he is really the Prince of Darkness at this point.
Right. And I mean, the way they booked matches back then, they just kind of let him go wherever. Even before all of these restrictions and whatnot, you didn't really see that. You know, you just saw it in the ring. Which, you know, taking the bumps on concrete and shit.
Yeah, they're now at the top of the stage to the left, pretty much in the crowd, but right at the edge of the barricade.
Yeah, I mean, just taking bumps like that, you don't really see it anymore, maybe for the better, but as a result of matches, it doesn't, they just felt more real. More of an actual fight, and
I think even if we pulled stuff out like this every once in a while, like, it would be okay. Like, it would be good if we saw a match like this, even if it was just once a year, maybe a few times a year. The referee trying to get control on this match, yelling at him to go back to the ring. The willingness of these referees, like just the psychological aspect of the ref, kind of like, even just like what I was talking about, being in fear of the wrestlers. They, you know, he doesn't want to count them out right now. Right. He wants them to do their thing and end up back in the ring.
Right.
And that is a hellacious bump.
Yeah, Undertaker. Taking it to the guardrail.
Right onto the concrete.
Back when they had those portable guardrails to the concrete.
Right.
And I mean, I can't remember if this was this a no disqualification match?
I don't think so.
Maybe it wasn't.
I don't know. Either way, we're in the Attitude Era, so the lines are always blurred between what's legal and what's not, really.
But you have Paul Bearer, who a interesting booking choice, but the right one. Paul Bearer is following The Rock and The Undertaker, which I never understood why managers would just stand in the ring and wait.
Right.
To come back. And this is kind of where it goes back and forth. You know, and then Undertaker, I think he takes the suplex here. No, The Rock takes the suplex, right? And that's something you don't really see in just the Bump on the Concrete. That's something you don't really see anymore.
Yeah, because that's not a mat. That's a rug right there rug. On the entrance.
Yeah. And you don't really see the... Because I think, you know, nowadays The Rock would have suplexed The Undertaker just because of The Rock's stature. But The Undertaker is, you know, 7 foot tall. Huge guy.
Yeah, he's twice the size of The Rock right here. I mean, this is like right after Chubby Rock, pretty much. Like, before, you know, before he really hit that, like, slender-ish frame that he had before he went off to Hollywood and got just fucking super jacked.
Yeah.
But going back to The Undertaker and kind of, like, I think just what he meant to the industry, I think, is just... absolutely, you know, paramount. Like, it's so important what The Undertaker did and has done, and especially, like, showing any generation you can get anything over. Because really the premise of The Undertaker is absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And should not have really even ever worked, let alone be a character that stood the test of time for 30 years.
Right.
And him being the locker room leader that he was, the stories of Wrestler's Court and Undertaker's judge, jury, and executioner, and I think just how important he was to even just keep all of these stars in line.
Right.
And his presence of, he is maybe the top, maybe not necessarily the top star, but between, like, respect and, you know, what he earned in the locker room. And to also be able to, well, I'll also, you know, do the job for you.
Right.
You know, and he's willing, you know, to do what's best for business legitimately when it comes to wrestling.
Right. Yeah. And that's something, again, like you said, that you don't really see anymore is, you know, big stars taking the L for, and he takes that old school bump there.
I don't think that was a bump. I think he botched that.
Maybe. But he was so good at selling things.
Absolutely. You didn't think it was a botch, necessarily.
Yeah. That's when The Rock went through that weird, like, water phase. When he, I don't know why they had him do that. Where he just spit water on people.
Yeah, The Rock went out of the ring, grabbed a water bottle, took a swig of it, and spewed it in Undertaker's face, and now we're back outside of the ring. The Rock clotheslining The Undertaker over the barricade, and we're off into the crowd. For me, I think the number one best memory for The Undertaker happened on a Monday Night Raw here in Kansas City. I was in attendance for, and... it was an awesome night. It was the night that John Laurinaitis was supposed to be reviewed by Triple H.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he made the whole joke of the Kiss My Ass Club. He was going to make him join it. Mm-hmm. That was funny. You know, that night was just altogether awesome. It was during, you know, CM Punk and his title run. Him and Daniel Bryan had a champion versus champion match that was... it got interrupted, but it was a good match, and it was just them two interacting. I always enjoyed, but just kind of setting the scene of, like, you know, what was going on during that time period.
Right.
And that was the night The Undertaker returned and wanted to, that was the build up for WrestleMania 28, the Hell in a Cell, the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, shout out to Meezy, he was there that night with me. And my little brother Zach, and I remember us kind of all just, and my dad was there too. So all of us kind of sitting there. I remember me and Meezy. I can't remember who said it. If it was me or him, I think it was him. He said the only thing that can make this night better would be if The Undertaker had just happened to show up. And we're in the, and I didn't even think about it, because if I would have thought about it, I could have seen that happening.
Right.
But it was absolutely unexpected. For me at the time, really thinking about it, and I just remember hearing the bell and the lights went out in the building, mm-hmm. and it was just the crazy, just being there for that was the craziest moment ever. Right. Totally unexpected, and Really, the last few years, I've gotten lucky with the Raws that I've chosen to attend. Yeah, I know
you saw Becky Lynch in her famous moment, too. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, Kansas City's had some good moments.
Absolutely.
And one extremely dark moment that, you know.
Yeah.
That, for those who don't know, look it up. But, when we get back to the match here, they both just kind of countered each other. I think the Undertaker hit the chair with a bell.
Yeah. I miss the ring bell. I miss the ring bell being a thing.
Yeah.
I miss on No Mercy. That was the greatest thing. Oh, hitting somebody with the bell and hearing the ding.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah, they stopped using that for some reason. Then Paul Bearer comes over with his shoe. He always used a shoe. I never understood that.
That's just great. And then menacingly laughing on the outside. Paul Bearer was awesome. Sometimes I could not stand to hear him talk, you know, but at the same time, he was absolutely great. Another kind of memorable thing of just being a kid, and then even just this is the era of The Undertaker, and sorry for our non-professional studio here, as you can hear, there's a fire somewhere near, but either way, the old WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy playing that, and I can remember having to skip the Undertaker's entrance, because if not, I would just want to turn the whole damn game off.
Right.
Because it terrified me. And I think that was, you know, that was great. A great part of his gimmick.
Yeah, I remember, I always remember that kind of stuff. It was his No Mercy entrance. Yeah, that was always the fun part. But seeing Paul Bearer's reactions are great, too. Because, I mean, he's the reason The Undertaker worked so well in the first place. Kind of sold him over as, you know, this strange being. And Paul Bearer was the only guy who could take care of this strange being. Even in the early part of The Undertaker's career.
And the power of the urn. Right,
yeah.
It's just so much the added to it and the layers of it. And man, so far in this match, really good match. We've got a rest hold going on right now. Rock fighting out of it, getting up to his feet.
That big boot. I mean, to be 6'11 or 6'10, however tall he is, really. And throw a big boot. I don't think people realize how hard that is to do. For even someone who's, 6'4", 6'5".
Absolutely.
To put it over your head, or at least to your shoulder, is impossible. But for him to do it at almost 7 foot is insane. And the heat from the fans was so different then. It was more real. You had people who hated the ministry and hated The Undertaker.
Yeah, and we're definitely still in that in-between stage, kind of like pre-internet for real. You can really see the fans and the crowd echoing Paul Bearer.
Mm-hmm.
To where, there was definitely smart fans.
Yeah.
And there were smart crowds, but it's definitely not like it was today. It's not like, you know, Brock Lesnar returning the night after WrestleMania and everybody in the building knew he was going to be there.
Right.
But
which, that would have been great if they didn't know.
Absolutely. Because when it is a shock, well, even look at the Hardys. I mean, I know it was speculated, but that was definitely,
I don't think anyone knew that.
Yeah. And especially because the night before that, they had just wrestled a ladder match with the Young Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't, expect that at all, necessarily.
And then because Edge's return to Royal Rumble.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you thought that, before his entrance, I thought, man, I wonder if Edge will end up coming back like they said he might. And he did, but that was, that was a maybe.
Right.
It was never he's coming back. Which he did a good job of keeping that quiet. And then the double clothesline here, which you don't really see a lot of anymore.
I was just about to say, what happened to the double clothesline? That's a good spot, and especially for, I think that's a good resting spot, because the double clothesline, it gives both men a feeling of, you know, that they're both, you know, very strong, and we're to a point in this match now where, you know, both of them are kind of worn down. We battled to the top of the entrance. We battled back to the crowd. We battled over by the announce tables. We've seen a chair and a ring bell involved. The Undertaker with his classic sit-up, but still doesn't look like he has quite the energy. Hasn't got up yet. The Rock crawling. Paul Bearer doing a
great job of selling the fact that The Rock is getting up too at the same time. Then they're going to... Rock's going to fire it up here. But the... To me, The Rock was one of the, is still one of the best ever firing it up.
Yeah.
And Stone Cold was, is probably the best, I think, in my opinion.
The way The Rock moves, though. Yeah. Like, he just, I mean, there's a reason they called him the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. I mean, he really was electrifying.
Right.
When he's setting up for the rock bottom and position and, you know, like he does his little hops or kind of, you know, whatever he's doing, it's just like, oh man, don't turn around, don't turn around.
And it's not the most graceful movement.
Right.
I wouldn't call him a glider, I wouldn't call him a Randy Orton, I wouldn't call him a Shawn Michaels, because it's not perfect, it's not flawless. I think Cena got a lot, and then they take out the ref here again, with the Undertaker tossing The Rock into the referee.
I like that move, too. That was a little innovative, where the Undertaker was reversing an Irish whip and threw The Rock straight into the referee where he clotheslined him. Now we're going to get a people's elbow spot with no referee.
And there were so many of that in this time period because it was important to the story. And honestly, I think they could probably get back to that, to kind of make the referee more important,
right,
than they have been. And the Undertaker gets a low blow in there after The Rock tried to wake the ref. And here we go. Here's what we were talking about. This was a strange tactic, and I know they used it on different shows, but this is a chloroform match for some reason. Not the stipulation of the match, but the Undertaker using chloroform potentially to his advantage.
Yeah, Paul Bearer just poured chloroform all over a rag and handed it to the Undertaker. The Undertaker is now reversed, or The Rock is now reversed. The Undertaker has the rag with the chloroform on it and has successfully applied it to the Undertaker's face.
Which allegedly it takes quite some time for chloroform to work.
Really? Interesting.
Which is what I read. So, but, you know, who knows? It's probably... And then Triple H comes in to save The Undertaker. Which, him and The Undertaker being on the same page at this time was different.
Absolutely.
But...
I think the whole ministry was different, but I think that's part of why it worked. Because
it tied in with Triple H and The Rock's rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Vince McMahon power struggle with Triple H and The Undertaker and Stone Cold. Yeah, all that worked. But what I was getting back to with The Rock's style in the ring, not the most glidey, I think, honestly, John Cena was underrated as a mover in the ring. If you watch some of his matches, it's not very clunky. You know, he's fairly smooth.
Honestly, he's very fluid.
Very fluid.
Yeah, absolutely.
More fluid than The Rock, I think, ever was. Not that The Rock was bad, but definitely a more fluid kind of guy than The Rock. Because The Rock kicks out the pedigree there by Triple H. But, you know, I think movement's important. I think that's why The Undertaker got over so well, is because of how well he moved.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the tombstone. I think this might be it after that pedigree. It was, yeah. So The Undertaker hit the pedigree, or Triple H hit the pedigree, Rock kicks out the pedigree, Undertaker hits the tombstone after waking up from the alleged chloroform, who knows what it actually was.
He's selling it. He's coughing and spitting.
Yeah, of course he is, yeah. And he wins that match. But it was such a it's not a super long match, because I don't think they could do it, but it was so physical, and they filled that time with the physicality of the match.
Absolutely, and it didn't need to be long for it to feel like, you know, a big deal, one, and two, just, I mean, you definitely feel like both of these guys gave it their all, like... Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about a little bit ago, you know, how they battled all over the arena, up to the entrance, the stage of the show, the entrance ramp, back down it, into the ring, out of the ring, into the crowd, over near the tables. There was a lot of maneuvering around, and with this being at King of the Ring, this is 99, so the year before that, would have been the Mankind match, the Hell in a Cell at King of the Ring.
Yes.
And I can remember, and just to kind of go back to simpler times of wrestling and just being, you know, overjoyed at, you know, getting this VHS or that VHS, mm-hmm. and going to Blockbuster, and getting different shows. I can remember as a kid, like, hearing about it, or maybe it was from another tape, or maybe it was just watching Raw, but and hearing about how, you know, he threw this man off the Hell in a Cell,
right,
and finally getting the VHS and popping it in and just trying to go to that match and figure out, you know, watch for myself. And you know, there's no way he threw him off of that. And that was such a wild, wild match.
Yeah, it was. I mean...
Right? What a...
That was a poorly cut session there, as you saw The Rock.
Yeah, the King of the Ring pay-per-view is still playing on. And
McMahon was on the phone, distraught about his partner not showing up, and The Rock had just come back from the match in the back, and just kind of strolling in the back.
Like, yeah, the camera happened. Accidentally yeah. panned to have him in the shot. He's got a towel over his shoulder, and he's going to go hit the showers after his match.
Yeah. But obviously, I mean, The Undertaker is easily, you know, one of the best, if not the best, ever. Not just for his wrestling ability, but for his overall education on the business, and understanding that losing isn't everything, especially for, you know, a bigger guy like The Undertaker.
Absolutely. Wins and losses aren't always everything. They're a big part, and I know in this day and age we complain a lot about 50-50 booking, but you know, Undertaker showed us, like, you know, it is okay to lose sometimes, and you should lose when you should lose, you know, right. Like, you should be able to do the job, even if you are some insane superstar.
Right.
Are there any other kind of moments or things that jump out to you, thinking about just The Undertaker's career in general?
You know, a moment that I remember... recall is his rivalry with Heidenreich.
That is a very random thing to remember.
It is a very random thing to remember. But it was the rebirth of the casket match. Because that match hadn't been around for a while.
Okay.
And then, I think it was Royal Rumble?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
Pretty sure it was Royal Rumble.
Okay.
When they had their casket match. And for those who don't remember Heidenreich, he was an interesting cat.
Very much so.
A very random character.
Yeah. They did some odd shit with him.
Yeah. But it basically his career culminated in losing to The Undertaker in a casket match, at the Royal Rumble. Which, you know, that's just one of those random Undertaker moments that you think about every now and then. Another one was probably when he wrestled Jeff Hardy on Raw.
Man, I can remember watching that live as a kid, and I loved Jeff Hardy, loved Team Extreme, and Yeah, that absolutely one of the greatest main events on Monday Night Raw of all time. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that was really what set Jeff Hardy, especially the trajectory, mm-hmm, of being a legit singles superstar and not, right, just, you know, an elevated mid-carder, but, right, to be an actual superstar. And for the title to even be on the line, you know, it was definitely a big deal. And even, I mean, I don't know how old I was, but I can remember, you know, like, knowing that, you know, that was a big deal.
Yeah, I think, what year was that? It was probably 03?
02, maybe.
02, 03, because it was the Undisputed title.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, like, in the weeks leading up to that was, because I can remember him hitting the last ride on Lita off the stage on Monday Night Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Right around that time frame.
I think it's when he turned heel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he was a heel for that match. I did not like that Undertaker. I mean, as a kid, as a heel, he definitely did a good job of getting heat with me.
Right. Yeah.
Around that time. The Royal Rumble incident with Maven. And I think that 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 was so perfect the way he did that because of Jericho being the champ at the time. That's before the Undisputed belt came around. Still, mm-hmm, had the two belts. And I can remember Jericho facing Maven, and the commentary definitely sold it. Like, you know, Maven's not even supposed to be here. What is he doing? He had a really good match with Jericho and ends up coming up just short. And then I think the Rumble was like right after that. And then, so you have this sympathetic character, right, that is just trying to get over and trying to, you know, achieve his dreams. And he eliminates the Undertaker, and, mm-hmm, then the Undertaker just massacres this poor kid,
yeah,
throughout the arena. And, you know, like, looking back as an adult, like, I mean, just beautiful work, really, with that, you know. Really made me hate the Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, that's perfect. That's what it's all about.
Well, that's a good time. So, the Undertaker, as you know, is allegedly his farewell Sunday at Survivor Series. We'll see.
Well, technically, at the time of this being released, that would have already happened.
Right.
But we are recording this a week before, right, Survivor Series.
Technically, we won't see. But technically, we will see.
Technically, we've already seen.
But, so 30 years for The Undertaker. A lot of more memories. And we're going to do, like I said, I did this on the last one. We're going to do a lot more of these. Not so much particular superstars, although if you want us to do that, we can definitely do that.
Yeah, we definitely felt like this one was a must with the farewell to Undertaker coming up. And, you know, it's still kind of being Survivor Series season. And, you know, we just had to take a look at a classic Undertaker match that meant something to both of us. And I mean, like DJ said, we're going to continue to do these. And, you know, I really enjoy going back to, you know, different old stuff. So, I mean, we're on IG, let us know. I'm definitely going to be posting some polls at some point, and we'll start to get something figured out where maybe we could have people vote on what we're going to do. But we really want to hear from you guys about all of this, whether it's you know, just the show in general or our Throwback Thursday episodes.
Because we know you're watching, but we want to hear you.
Absolutely.
So with that, we're out of here, and we will get you more content very soon.